You're listening to the Leadership Journey podcast with me, Alan Wilson, the host of the podcast. Each episode of the podcast gives you the opportunity to reflect on some of the stories and lessons that make up a leadership journey. And you can subscribe to the Leadership Journey podcast on iTunes, and you can even leave a review. This week, my guest again is Ken Clark. Ken is Mission Director of South American Mission Society, UK and Ireland. He has served as a missionary, he's served as a bishop, and he has also served as a local church leader. Ken likes to think of a leader as someone with a compass in their head and a magnet in their heart. And in last week's episode, he talked about some of the events and the people that helped to form him for leadership. Among other things this week, Ken talks about the importance of leaders making time to be reflective, and he shares some of his key leadership advice. Ken, welcome back to the Leadership Journey podcast.
Thank you so much.
I know we've been seeing quite a bit of each other. We've been talking about these subjects even with our event in Dublin just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, which was great.
It was good to really be there good. And good feedback on that. I want to begin with a question that arises from some of the things that we talked about last week. It's got to do with the idea that part of your formation was older leaders giving you responsibility as a young person. And somebody wanted to raise the question around that. Really, I suppose, to do with the element of risk. Do you know, were they taking a risk? And for a, let's say for somebody who's wanting now to develop young people, how do you determine who are the young people that, yeah, I can take a risk on that one, and where are some of the ones that, no, I'm not sure. What advice would you have on that?
Yeah, it's certainly a very delicate balance, Alan. And I think one of my starting points would be sometimes we will get it wrong.
Okay.
But actually, that is okay. Part of learning is sometimes we don't quite get it right. And, you know, when we first went to Chile, that was one of the big differences I noticed between Chile and the circles I moved in, or some of the circles I moved in Ireland. One of the things I learned from my brothers and sisters in Chile is that sometimes getting it wrong or making a mistake is part of a learning process. And the key thing is, what do I learn out of this? How could I have done this differently? Whereas some of us have the mindset of perfectionism, and if we make a mistake, it's seen as, you know, a world crisis. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you and I learned to walk, we didn't suddenly stand up and walk seamlessly. Mm-hmm. We tumbled along the way, you know. I think we need to see more clearly that part of the learning process is we are going to make mistakes, but we learn from those mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I think the way Jesus related to the disciples is a classic example of that. Look at the mistakes Peter made, for example, and yet look at what he became.
Yeah.
Your point about, you know, the risk element, there is a risk element, that's for sure. And I think sometimes we can go to one of two extremes, or indeed sometimes both. And one extreme is somebody joins a church or joins the fellowship group or whatever, and they're suddenly handed so much responsibility. Mm-hmm. And it's just far too much, quite frankly, and it's overwhelming, and they sink. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, that's one extreme, and it's in general, as a general principle, I don't think it's wise to do that. Mm-hmm. The other extreme is that people aren't given any responsibility, mm-hmm. and they're mollycoddled. And then we become like the Christians Paul talked about, where, you know, I should be talking to you as adults, but actually you're still spiritual babes. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced one of the best ways to grow as a Christian is to get exercise, to actually do it, not just know it. So in terms of discerning when someone is ready, I think one important principle is to make sure they're actually being prepared by you or somebody else mm-hmm. for the responsibility with which they're being mm-hmm. entrusted. Mm-hmm. And I think a very helpful way of that preparation is that they shadow somebody for a while and watch how somebody else does it. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of this. For quite a few years, in my late teens, early 20s, I served on Portrush CSSM team. And our leader was Godfrey Brown, a wonderful man of God and an excellent trainer. And, you know, some of the first times I was asked to do a children's talk, he would have given me an outline for it and would have helped me with it. And that was after I'd had the opportunity of listening to him and others and observing and listening and learning. So you weren't being dropped in at the deep end. You were actually being prepared for this responsibility. And again, Alan, I think that is the Jesus way. You know, he modeled something for the disciples. He taught them. He trained them. Then he sent them out. And then they'd come back with their questions. You know, why could we not do this? And so there was a lot of interaction. And it was a kind of accompaniment, a walking together in the learning process. And I think that's a great model for us in terms of who we entrust responsibility to. The final point, I think, is discerning the character of the person as well. You know, just seeing where the potential is. And my final plea would be, don't ignore the shy ones. In my experience, often the shyest of our young people are those who become the best leaders. And I can think of one person in particular. He, as a teenager, he was a shy boy. He got converted. I remember some of the first times he led a Bible study. He was so nervous as he held the notes he had written out in his handwriting. You could see the notes visibly moving up and down. How he read them, I do not know. He became one of the best leaders I know in Northern Ireland years later. But it started in very, very nerve-wracking foundations.
Yeah, but there's character. That needs to be discerned in all of that, and sometimes that can be missed because there's an apparent, you know, giftedness or charisma. Correct. Or something like that. Okay, good. Well, like that's helpful. It's certainly a useful discussion. Let's get back to your story, your own story. One of the things I said last week was how there's a kind of almost a symmetry in terms of your ministry. You're approaching retirement from South American Mission Society. And of course, relatively early on in your ministry, after your curacy, I think, you and your family went to South America.
That's right.
Give us one or two pictures of what that was like, going as a North Down man who presumably didn't have Spanish as a first language.
Definitely not.
Out to work in South America. What was some of those experiences like?
Sure. Well, I mean, as an introduction to it, one of the connecting threads in my story is I did two curacies, begins with the letter C, went to Chile, begins with the letter C, from Chile to Crinkin in south side of Dublin, begins with C. From Crinkin to Coleraine in the north of Ireland begins, in the north of Northern Ireland begins with C. So I was sure I was destined for Canterbury, Alan, but obviously that wasn't to be. We moved from a second curacy in East Belfast, Ballybean Estate, Dundonald area, to Chile, to the south of Chile. We left in September 1978 from Dundonald, and we went in a little minibus over to the south of England, to Tunbridge Wells, where we did an orientation course. And just a little PS on that, which was a huge blessing. One of the younger folks in our congregation in Dundonald really believed God was calling her to help Helen with our four little girls, who were very young at the time. I cannot tell you what a blessing that girl was with us and for us. And she was there as a backup, just willing to serve and to help in any way she could. Because when we went, our eldest daughter, Ali, was only about four or five, and the other three were younger than that. So, you know, trying to do an orientation course to prepare for overseas mission, look after four little kids, living with others in a community, was quite a stretch. And the blessing of that girl, Susan, in our lives was just immense. And I think it's another expression of people being willing to serve the Lord and respond to his call in a humble, servant-hearted way. What a blessing. That orientation course was enormously helpful. We learnt some basic Spanish in the lab, which we called the torture chamber. And then we had a lot of lectures from people who'd been to South America, principles of cross-cultural mission and so on. And one of the things we heard about the most was really cultural shock,
yeah.
You know, and cross-cultural shock. And I have to tell you, in my total arrogance and pride, I thought that will never happen to me. But it did.
Mm.
And we'd only been in Chile a few months, and I just was so frustrated because I wasn't speaking the language that I wanted to. I couldn't preach the way I wanted to. I didn't understand people the way I wanted to when I was listening to them because of this language difficulty. And I can tell you, I suffered from what I thought I would never suffer from. And the frustration got so great. I remember one day I was peeling the spuds, and one of the best things Helen brought with us was a pressure cooker, because she prepared so many meals in that pressure cooker. But I got so frustrated, I just threw the potato peeler across the kitchen, and Helen nearly died of shock. She'd never seen this side of her husband before. But it honestly was frustration.
Mm.
And it was a very humbling experience, and I realised, my, I have so much to learn here. Mm. I think a second thing I would say is that I also realised that, you know, it's not we in the West know it all, and people mm-hmm. in other parts of the world know very little.
Mm-hmm.
I would often say we learnt as much from our brothers and sisters in Chile as I suspect they ever learned from us.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it was a case of we were disciples together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Just, I want to go back on that culture shock thing. Were you there without, you know, without the, you know, an adequate facility in the language to be able to fully be yourself?
Mm.
You know, anyone listening to this who maybe is serving in an overseas situation, how are we going to identify with that? It's sort of a crucible of some kind, isn't it?
Very much so, especially if you're a communicator.
Yeah.
You know, if the ministry God has called you to is a listening ministry,
mm-hmm.
Is a communication ministry, then a level of understanding is absolutely
mm-hmm.
vital.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's very interesting, Alan, in many parts of the world, and South America is one of these, people can tell very quickly whether you really care for them or not.
Right.
I remember a South American indigenous Indian saying, you know, within a couple of minutes of people arriving with us, we know from their eyes whether they really, really care for us or
my
not.
Goodness. That's challenging.
And yeah. I think people know if you have a genuine heart of compassion for them and a humility,
mm-hmm.
or they see through you
mm-hmm.
if it's for some other reason.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, sometimes people can end up going to another part of the world as an escape route.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not
yeah.
the right motivation.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened that was a real learning curve for me, and again, it's an important principle of leadership. We'd been there about 6 to 9 months, I guess, and the situation was we really had been called to a church planting situation.
Mm-hmm.
We inherited from a bishop who was there, who was an Anglo-Chilean, a very small group of people who were Christians, who were meeting together regularly, but our brief was to help grow that little group into a church. And we had, after a few months, a kind of embryonic, very embryonic core leadership group, church council. And I remember meeting with them one night. And we were sitting together, and at one point they asked me to leave the room. And I thought, this is very strange. Back home in the Church of Ireland, if one of the clergy's asked to leave a vestry meeting, it's probably because they're going to discuss the person's stipend and how much they're earning. So you're hoping for a pay rise, you know. But we were missionaries. They weren't supporting us financially. So I couldn't understand what this was about. Was called back in a few minutes later. And Claudio, who was their kind of spokesman, I'll never forget this, looked me in the eye and he said, Fanta, we just want to know here why you are here. What is your purpose in being here? And what I discovered at that point was this family from Ireland had kind of suddenly arrived in this city in the south of Chile and hadn't really been prepared mm-hmm. as to why we were coming, mm-hmm. what we were coming to
they
do.
They hadn't been prepared.
Arrival. We had just kind of landed like some kind of aliens from outer space. Uh-huh. So it was a very, very reasonable question. Yeah. You know, what are you doing here? But I have to tell you, out of that came the most incredibly fruitful conversation mm-hmm. and discussion. Mm-hmm. And it helped clarify things both for them and for us. And I've often thought since every local church on a regular basis should press the pause button mm-hmm. and ask that question. Mm-hmm. Why are you here?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are we here for? Yeah. What's God's purpose in us mm-hmm. being here mm-hmm. as a community of faith?
Of course, the problem is too many local churches are just far too busy keeping a programme.
Well, you see, this is what happens. I often say every September the magic roundabout starts again.
The magic roundabout, yeah.
And we just do what mm-hmm. we did the previous year. But but we're not asking, what is this all about?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I remember Helen and I, we had only, I think, maybe three girls at the time, and we were asked to speak in a church at their young wives group, and we were asked to speak on parenting, and like we were novices in parenting, and anyway we did our best, went along, but when we went to this group, half the group were grandmothers but it was called the young wives group, you know, and I just thought, you know, there's an example of a group that exists started for young wives, but nobody kind of thought of pressing the pause mm-hmm. button and think, are we still a young wives mm-hmm. group? Now, I know age is a sensitive area and I don't want to go there, but the point I'm making is it is so important to be clear on what our purpose is.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to fast forward quite a bit. And
sure.
We'll come back to some of the moving back from Chile to Ireland maybe a little later.
Yeah.
But just this idea of the, you know, what is our purpose? What are we doing here? I know from previous conversation that during your time as a bishop, one of the things you experienced was traveling. You got to see lots and lots of churches. Some of them were very small. Some of them were very big and very enthusiastic. Mm. And I know that experience sort of forced the same kind of question to bubble up within you.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I went through a phase of several years, actually, and often being at a time of worship on a Sunday morning or a Sunday evening and just kind of reflecting on what is this all about? Mm. You know, because sometimes as a church, whatever our tradition is, we can be more like a private members club than a gospel community. Mm-hmm. And as you know, sometimes you could preach and you'll see somebody catching up on sleep they've lost the night before. I'm sure that never happens to you.
I'll not talk about it while the recorder's running here. I'll tell you afterwards.
Or we're singing a wonderful hymn and some people are just standing there and clearly they are miles away from these wonderful truths we're singing about. Or you can see clearly some people are just not engaged. Mm-hmm. And so it really prompted me to start thinking, what are we actually doing when we come here for worship? What is this all about? And then I took a step back from that to go a bit further and think, well, what actually is Christianity all about? Yeah. You know, take away all the wrapping paper and the packaging and the paraphernalia. At the very core of it, what is it all about? And I was drawn to the Gospels, reading again what Jesus said, and it really came to me so clearly that at the heart of it is that call of Christ, follow mm-hmm. me, mm-hmm. and that the Christian life is about a relationship with him, being a disciple of Christ. It wasn't, you know, sign up to a constitution, it wasn't filling your free will offering envelopes with as much money as you can. It was quite simply, in English, follow mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And they left their nets mm-hmm. and followed him. Mm-hmm. And it's that letting go of those nets that is so vitally important, whatever our nets are, and having him as our top priority and passion in our lives. In other words, our lives are submitted to him as Lord. We are under his lordship, his direction. And actually, that is what it's all about. And it's what Christ's vision for the church is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That has to be our vision.
That, I mean, that gives me that it raises two further questions in my mind. One of those is, and they're both to do with leaders. You as a leader obviously took the time to reflect on issues of purpose and what is all this about. What advice would you give to leaders, especially people who are in senior leadership and are very busy, mm-hmm. about the need to take time to be reflective?
I think it's absolutely vital, Alan. I mean, I think when you look at the... I mean, let me begin by saying, I think Christ is our model for everything. Mm-hmm. And here is this man who really for 30 years prepared for a ministry of three. We do it the other way around in general. And yet... during those 3 years, he also built in time to go to the mountain, mm-hmm. to go to the lake, to commune with his father. And I think words that are foundational for all leaders are those words of Jesus. I always do what pleases my father. Mm-hmm. I always do what pleases him. So that's our bar. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not primarily there to please the elders, the vestry, the session, whatever tradition we come from. Our number one priority in terms of pleasing is to please our Father, honour him. And therefore, his vision for the church is what our vision has to be. Mm-hmm. And when you read Jeremiah and look at the contrast between the true prophets and the false prophets, one of the marks of the false prophets is this: they didn't listen mm-hmm. to God. Mm-hmm. They didn't stand on his counsel. They didn't seek mm-hmm. his face. They just peddled and presented their own opinions, their own ideas. In contrast to the true prophets who stood in the counsel of the Lord, mm-hmm. who listened to the word of the Lord and then declared the word of the mm-hmm. Lord. Mm-hmm. So I'm convinced we as leaders really have to spend time in God's perfume factory.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is, I was listening to a dear friend who's a bishop in South America recently, and he told us about a place in France where there's a perfume factory, and all the people who work in it, when they come home in the evening, if they have a shower, if they have a bath, if they have a complete change of clothes, it will not get rid of the scent of that perfume. And this Bishop Alf Cooper said, we need to spend more time in the Lord's perfume factory. Mm-hmm. And I think as leaders, if we don't spend time in the perfume factory and we don't have the aroma of Christ about us, we're actually either going to implode or explode. Mm-hmm. We're going to run out of steam. We're going to burn out, because it's that literally holy communion which mm-hmm. will sustain us. Mm-hmm. The famous Scottish preacher Robert Murray McShane said on one occasion, the greatest need of my people is my own mm-hmm. personal holiness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm convinced, Alan, that one of the top priorities for all Christians, mm-hmm. but not least leaders, mm-hmm. is that we are listeners and lovers mm-hmm. And learners. Mm-hmm. We're listening for the word of the Lord, because that's what we're to declare. We're learning from Christ, we're disciples, and one of the root meanings of the word disciple is student. And we're seeking to love people with his love and see people, look at people through his eyes.
But do you think, though, there's a certain kind of leadership talk, especially among leaders who are quite busy, that we, you know, we're looking at certain leadership examples of leadership, maybe trying to draw them from the business world and so on, that militate against all those kind of things, and that leaders are more interested in being talkers, they're more interested in being teachers, and they're more interested in being organisers and monarchs than they are being listeners and learners and people who love.
Well, I think that is absolutely true, and I think we, you know, if that is our view of ministry, we need to relearn it. Mm-hmm. We need to be more biblical. Mm-hmm. I mean, the CSSM leader I had, who I referred to, Godfrey Brown, I remember before I was ordained, Godfrey said to me, and it was actually strange at the time, but it was so, so wise. He said to me, Fanta, you will find that once you are ordained, you will be one great big ear. Now, the common perception of the preacher and pastor is we're one great big mouth. But actually, he was so, so right.
Yeah.
Because it's that listening to God which is utterly foundational in what we do. Whether it's sermon preparation, whether it's listening to somebody in their home or wherever we're meeting with them, you know, it's seeking to hear what the Lord is speaking into this particular situation.
The other thread just from this reflection, and I think it is all very connected. I know one of your convictions is that leaders are still followers.
And
essentially,
absolutely.
And the essential identity of a leader is actually a follower.
Yeah.
Can I ask you the listening thing as well? I know that you had an experience that this idea of listening was brought very forcibly to you.
I'll never forget it. Helen and I had been invited to a convention in northwest Uganda in a pretty remote place. I'd been asked to preach at this diocesan convention. We went and flew into Entebbe and then had to get an MAF plane to Arua up in northwest Uganda. First time in my life getting on a plane, on this MAF plane. Before getting on, not only were your cases weighed, but you were weighed as well. It's a bit of a reality check. And we got into this tiny plane, by the grace of God, arrived in Arua, went to this convention, at which I was expecting just a few hundred people, and there were several thousand people. And during the course of this convention, the bishop, who later became Archbishop of Uganda, Henry Arambi, informed Helen and I that the diocese had just bought a mountain, as you do. The story behind this, very briefly, was one of the factors in the remarkable growth of the church in South Korea in the 20th century is the priority the church in South Korea placed on prayer. And one of the features of the prayer life of the church in South Korea is what they call prayer mountains, places where people go, individuals, small groups, large groups, just to pray, to seek God's face. So Henry thought this was the vision, part of God's vision for the diocese he was in, Nebbi. So he said, I want to show you this mountain. So the day was fixed when we'd go off to visit this mountain. Sadly, Helen, the night before we were to go, had one of the worst bouts of food poisoning I have ever witnessed. But very graciously, she said to me, listen, you go with Henry and I'll just stay here to try and recover a bit. So off Henry and I went, drove into the middle of nowhere, the African jungle, and started going up this mountain, and he explained this was the mountain. We got out of the vehicle and he pointed me over in the distance. He said, that's the Congo. And then to my absolute horror, Alan, he said, now, Ken, I'm going to leave you for a while and I'll come back. I'm going away to pray. Honestly, I have to be honest, that at that moment, the only prayer in my head was, Lord, help, is this man crazy? He's leaving me here in the middle of the jungle on my own, not a soul in sight. And all I could think of was the Lord's resistance army, gorillas, wild animals, snakes, dear knows what. And like, this was for several hours. The only thing I had with me was a bottle of water and my Bible. I have to tell you.
Were you out in the open or were you among trees?
Well, amongst trees and a little bit of open space, okay. So that you could see a bit from, because we were fairly high up this mountain. So I have to say, to my shame, I couldn't remember the last time in my busy ministry time had been set aside, like several hours, just to pray and spend time alone with God. And that became one of the most precious, special times in my whole life. Just seeking to worship God on that mountain, listen to the Lord. And in fact, one of the passages I read was from Isaiah 50, verse 4. And it was just like a word from heaven to me in terms of clarifying what God's call on me was. And it was those words, the sovereign Lord has given me an instructed tongue. He has given me a word to sustain the weary. He wakens me morning by morning as someone who's listening, listening to his word. And that just helped clarify for me, Alan, what God's call was on my life. And I have to tell you, I have found so often it's in the early hours of the morning that some of what older folks might call blessed thoughts come into my mind. Ideas for sermons, maybe a prompting about somebody to pray for. It is the way God has worked in my life. And it also clarified that, you know, God wanted to use me with the weary, the tired, the stressed, and give a word of encouragement. And it meant so much to me that I have that text inscribed in my bishop's ring on the inside, so that I never forget it.
That's terrific. Thank you. Going back to Chile, how long did you stay there?
Well, put it like this, we weren't there nearly as long as we thought we would be.
Okay, so you ended up coming back much, well...
Yeah, we did.
You came back, but not in the timetable that you had
thought. No, we thought we'd be there for many, many years, if not for life. But we ended coming back after 2.5 years on doctor's advice because two of our daughters developed quite serious eye problems, which required surgery. One in particular, her eyesight was giving serious concern. And so we headed home, but we headed back to Northern Ireland thinking we'd be returning after all of this. And to cut a long story short, the two girls had surgery in the Royal, and thank God it was successful and they did well. But the seasoned advice really was it was probably wiser not to go back, which was a huge shock to us and disappointment. Now, in hindsight, you know, as my wise wife says, often we understand God's purposes more clearly through the rear view mirror. And we can see now that he was at work in this. And many years later, a whole situation unfolded about one of those girls, one of our daughters, a horrendous situation actually that we knew nothing about at the time. And I can see in hindsight, God was really in this, but we didn't see that at the time. So it was a huge adjustment to accept that this was how God was leading us.
What would you say to people who are, you know, maybe in a ministry situation where they're dealing with, you know, they're in a situation which is not what they had intended that it would be or not what they thought it would be?
Well, I mean, to be absolutely honest, I think the one word I would say is trust. It is... You just are throwing yourself completely on the mercy of God. And, you know, my really good Presbyterian friends, certainly when I was a student, used to remind me so much, you know, about the importance of the sovereignty of God and how right they are. And I think it's at those times when you really don't understand. Or maybe you're praying and the heavens just seem to be closed. Or it's really difficult and painful, that you trust and just lean on a God, knowing that he does care, knowing that he is there, even though, you know, all sorts of things are suggesting the opposite. I mean, it's let's be honest, it's what faith is all about. And it's becoming a little bit like the whole Abraham story too. You know, it's sometimes in our Christian lives, the Lord is asking us to step out without knowing the agenda, without knowing the details. If you're a structured person and a detailed person, that is a big ask. But it really is about trusting the God who loves us and cares for us more than anybody else. Trusting in the promises of God become hugely and massively important. Like Romans 8:28 was so important for us, that all things work together for good. Dealing with disappointment is another thing, and that's, I think, a huge issue for many Christians. And I remember a friend sharing a little verse with us that had helped him so much. Disappointment, his appointment, change one letter and I see, that the thwarting of my purpose was God's better plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think if we can somehow move, and it's not easy sometimes, move from the disappointment to trying to catch a glimpse of what his appointment is, mm-hmm. then we're beginning to move forward.
Mm-hmm. What have been some of the other challenges, just looking back over your leadership journey, what have been some of the other big challenges that you've had to deal with?
I think one challenge, Alan, has been, well, it follows on from this, really trusting God mm-hmm. and learning how to deal with disappointment. In my later teens, I'll give you an example of this. I had been invited to speak one night at the youth group of a Presbyterian church in Hollywood. I think from memory I was an upper sixth at the time. And I have to tell you, never before or since did I pray as much about a speaking engagement. Honestly, I prayed my guts out about this speaking. And I see, when I went that Sunday night, I was absolutely convinced somebody was going to become a Christian. Mm-hmm. Utterly convinced. Gave the talk, gave an opportunity to pray a prayer of commitment. Arrived home that night so disappointed, because nobody, as far as I knew, had given their life to Christ. Yet I was utterly convinced it was going to happen. Few days passed, nothing. Weeks passed, nothing. And I was really thrown by this. I thought, I prayed, I did exactly everything that the Lord wanted me to do. A year later, Alan, to the day, this guy came to me. He said, "Fanta, do you remember a year ago today you were speaking at our youth group?" I said, "Joe, I will never forget it." He said, "I want to tell you, I gave my life to Christ that night." Oh, Alan, I nearly wept, honestly. In fact, a few months ago, I got an email from him to say it was 50 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Yeah.
What did I learn from that?
Yeah.
Trust God.
Yeah.
Trust God and trust his promises. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though the external circumstances seem to suggest the opposite of what we know and believe,
mm-hmm.
believe what the Bible says mm-hmm. and believe God's promises and keep trusting. Mm-hmm. So that was a really, really important mm-hmm. lesson. Mm-hmm. And I think out of that, what God is calling us to be is be faithful.
Yeah.
Do what he tells us mm-hmm. to do and leave the results to him. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Don't be obsessed with numbers. Don't be obsessed with the results. Focus on him.
Mm-hmm.
Bring his presence into the situation
mm-hmm.
and leave the outcomes to him.
Yeah. We've just got a few minutes to go here. And I just want to give you the opportunity. Other things that you have gleaned along the way that you think, you know, maybe especially for younger leaders who are listening, what would you want to say to them?
Okay. There are a few things I think I'd want to say is, number one, don't be a maverick. You know, look at the way Jesus worked. Look at the way Paul worked. Look at the way Peter worked. And how did they work? They thought teams. They thought teams. They worked as part of a team. They served as part of a team. So I would say to younger leaders, to all leaders, think team, practice team. Paul and Timothy, Paul and Luke, Paul and Barnabas, Jesus and his disciples, think team. Don't try and go it alone. And that is just so important. And for those who are leaders of teams, I heard some brilliant advice recently. Train people well enough so that they're ready to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Treat people well enough so that they don't want to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are a lot of churches would be very different if we as church leaders practiced those two principles. Mm-hmm. It was actually Sir Richard Branson spoke those words. Mm-hmm. But when I heard them, I thought, that's what Jesus did. He trained them well enough so that they were ready to be sent out. They didn't maybe believe they were ready, but Jesus saw it that way. The only difference is they didn't want him to leave.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. If in a sense, that was the other way around. But I think there's something really, really important there. So, and if you're a team leader as well, or part of a team, recognize that the members of the team have different personalities and different capacities. That was one of the lessons I had to learn over the years as a team leader. God has given me, well, my wife keeps reminding me, quite an expansive capacity for work, and I enjoy it, absolutely love it, but not everybody else is that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, some of us work within a very highly structured mindset. Others of us work in a very spontaneous mindset. And one isn't right and one isn't wrong. It's just we're different. But to appreciate those differences. So, for example, if we're part of a team, I would encourage the team to do some kind of personality analysis so that we understand each other.
Like a Myers-Briggs.
Like a Myers-Briggs, exactly. Like that, yeah. Uh-huh. And so that we understand why we react the way we do. You know, like I remember one of our team members, for him, one of the most stressful things was a crisis, a pastoral crisis. Why was it so stressful? Because it interrupted the program he had made out in his diary, you know? Whereas another member of the team would think, great, an opportunity, you know? Yeah. So it's understanding those differences, I think, is hugely important. I think a third thing I would say is, make sure you have in your life really close soul friends, people with whom you can be completely honest, people who you know are with you. There's a beautiful, beautiful phrase in Samuel, which is describing the nature of the friendship between David and Jonathan. And it has helped me so much over the years. And it's simply this: Jonathan helped David find strength in God. And I would want to say, who are the people in our lives are helping us find strength in God? And who are we helping find strength in God? And finally, I would say, a key verse for me over the years, Alan, has been Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, where the wise writer of Proverbs says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of your life. Mm-hmm. Now, even a slow in the uptake guy like myself can understand that if that verse begins above all else, there's something really important here. Yeah. This is a high octane value and priority. And it links very much with what Paul said to the elders from Ephesus whom he met at Miletus, where he said, guard yourselves and guard the church of God or the flock committed to your charge. And I think some of us in leadership are so busy guarding God's flock that we don't guard ourselves. And we need to make sure that we are prioritising soul keeping. Read John Ortberg's book on soul keeping, superb. We need to look after our bodies. For Helen and I, exercise is really important. Somehow get exercise. You know, our bodies are meant to be the temple of the Holy Spirit. We need to look after them. Keep our minds active. Paul talks about renewing our minds, the renewal of our minds. So, you know, all of those things are so important so that we can be the best for the God who's given us his best.
Fantastic. Well, listen, this has been very rich. Thank you so much, you, both for last week and for today. And God bless you as you finish up over these next few months.
Thank you.
I think you said you'd no longer be working for Sam's, but you'd still be an ambassador for Sam's. And I'm sure in the will of God, you have your fingers in many situations and continue to be an influence. And God has really, I think, raised you up as a significant influence and a help and encouragement to many, many people.
Thank you.
Certainly, particularly in this part of the world and obviously much further afield as well. So God bless you.
Thank you, brother. It's a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of the Leadership Journey podcast. And thanks to Ken for talking to us. Next week, I'll be back with another episode of the podcast. I'll be speaking to another Ken. This time it's Ken McBride. Ken is the former minister of Orangefield Presbyterian Church in East Belfast. In the meantime, have a good week and God bless you.